It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Since its inception nearly 30 years ago, more than 1,000 people have been helped by a program called the Community Partners Program. It provides people with disabilities the tools to remain in their homes and become integrated into society. The man behind the success of this and other programs is a fellow named Al Condoleezza, the CEO of Community Living and Support Services, or CLASS. He also teaches at the University of Pittsburgh, and he joins us now in Studio A. Al Condoleezza, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you, Paul. It's really a pleasure to be with you today.
There are plenty of documented examples of people with disabilities who you have helped to live independently. Why is it important for people like this to maintain their independence?
Well, Paul, it's hugely important, both in terms of people's self-confidence and self-esteem, but actually the term we like to use is interdependently, because one of the key things that we really focus attention on at CLASS is that folks have an opportunity to build relationships. Social capital is sort of the jargon term that's used. And what we know is when people have relationships, any person that has more relationships ultimately will have a better life. And so a lot of what we really try to do is recognize that folks have various skills. They can be at certain levels of independence, but all of us can be interdependent.
You're being recognized for helping people with disabilities live, as you say, interdependently. How did this come to be your life's work?
Oh, Paul, I'm local Pittsburgh guy, born and raised in McKees Rocks, and growing up on a family hill. It's called Condoleezza Hill in McKees Rocks. And when I was growing up on the hill, my best buddy was my cousin Carol. And Carol and I, hung around together up on the hill. And Carol was treated just like everyone else. But it wasn't until we started to go off the hill and I discovered that actually Carol was not – that she was treated differently by people because of Down syndrome. Up on the hill, Carrie was just another Condoleezza, but when we went down into the community of McKees Rocks and Stowe Township, and the way Carrie was treated really became, for me, a clarion call towards this field. I just really felt that lots of folks misunderstood Carrie, or they treated her based on her difference and didn't see all the things that Carrie had, in her life and available in terms of community. So that really got me started as a young guy, and I've continued on from there.
Why is it important for people who are disabled, why is it important for them to be able to live in the community, interact with people, and have that kind of socialization?
Well, Paul, it's first off, one of the things that's most problematic for anyone is social isolation. If people become isolated, that's just not a good thing in any way, shape, or form. Whether you have a disability or not is irrelevant. And so being a part of the community is and having connectedness really begins to break up that social isolation risk that folks with disabilities might experience because of the challenges that they're facing. But on the other side of the coin, the reason why it's so good to have an inclusive community is that people without disabilities begin to rethink their perspective and their perception of disability. So it's actually good both ways. It's good for the person who has a disability to be connected, and it's good for people without disabilities to come to understand that folks with disabilities are more like them than they're different from them.
Is it risky, though? Because as you look back on your experience with your cousin, Carol, mm-hmm. when she got away from the people that knew her, mm-hmm. loved her, and mm-hmm. cared about her, she was treated differently, and I assume by differently you mean not always in the best way. And we've seen that. We watch how people are treated in society, and this is no great mystery here. So do you run the risk then of you don't want to isolate people, and you've explained why you don't want to do that, but by exposing them to all sorts of people in their neighborhood and not being able to control that situation. Is there a risk factor involved that they're in the sense that they're going to be treated in an adverse way?
There's two things about your question. It's a great question, Paul. There's two things about it that are really important. One is that there's a dignity in risk. When people don't have an opportunity to risk, that really cuts off a very important part of life. But what mitigates the risk is social capital. What we come to know, Paul, is that when people build relationships, that they're treated in more positive ways. Pro-social behaviors go up with social capital. So it's not just about people being thrown into the community and say, okay, good luck. It's really a strategic approach of helping people build relationships. And we actually use a four-step model at class that really guides this process where we get people connected by something they like. We really help people understand what's expected of them. And then we look for a gatekeeper who can actually help people build those relationships that really create safety.
And I understand that the program has undergone a name change from UCP/class to simply class. Why is that?
Yeah, you know, we started back in 1951, Paul, as a UCP. UCP stands for United Cerebral Palsy. And we became an affiliate of UCP. When I joined the organization in 73, we were still UCP. But one of the things we came to discover is that as we broadened our agenda supporting folks with all types of disabilities, people in the community that knew United Cerebral Palsy thought we only supported people with cerebral palsy. So in order to really broaden and have a bigger reach, we decided that to become independent of UCP. And it was a great relationship we had with UCP, very amicable change that we made. And now we're simply class, giving us a bigger reach that we can support folks with all types of disabilities, and we can actually support them anywhere in Western Pennsylvania.
Our guest is Al Condolusi. He's the CEO of Community Living and Support Services, or CLASS, joining us here in Studio A to talk about his program and how it helps people with disabilities. And your work also supports children.
Yes. Actually, one of the important elements we feel is that the sooner kids with and without disabilities are included together in things, recreational things, social things, educational things, the better off society is. Because as young children without disabilities become exposed to kids with disabilities, they have a broader perspective. I know when I was growing up, Paul, and probably this is similar in your experience, that folks with disabilities weren't always around. They weren't in the mix. We didn't see them that often in school.
No, you didn't. And they were separated. They were separated in school. They were in different classrooms. Then they didn't interact.
Exactly.
And you're saying that was not necessarily a good thing.
I don't think it was a good thing at all. And anytime a group of people, whether they have disabilities or not, get segregated or separated from the broader community, everybody loses in that deal. I mean, the broader community becomes diminished in some way, and the person with the disability become more isolated in terms of relationships with people who might be different from them.
And more likely to be targeted for some kind of abuse.
Absolutely. Absolutely. What really addresses the safety factor is that is relationships. We know that people are safer not because of the police. They're safer because they're known. People know them. People watch out for them. People help them. So it's our social capital, our relationships that actually keep us safe, sane, healthy, achievement, advancement. All those positive things are tied to the relationships we have with others.
Over the past 40 years, what have been the most significant developments in helping the people with disabilities live independent lives?
Paul, that's a great question as well. And there are some high marks, certainly in my career over 44 years in the field. There are three things that really come to mind. One is certainly the deinstitutionalization movement that happened in the early 70s, where folks who were previously institutionalized had opportunities to move back into the community. I think the second big step forward was the attendant care program that was passed in Pennsylvania in 1984. Governor Thornburgh signed it. And that provided resources for people to live in the community. And then probably the third is the ADA, the Americans with Disabilities Act, which was passed in 1990.
By Senator Tom Harkin.
Senator Harkin, who,
to speak to your example of familiarity, had a brother with a disability, and that sort of led the spurred him on.
That's exactly correct. And, you know, Paul, that point that you just made is really a powerful one, because every one of us, people listening to this show today, have some personal experience with disability somewhere in our family, a mom who had a stroke, a dad who had Parkinson's, a cousin who had Down syndrome. And every one of us have some personal experience. And if you live long enough, you will have a personal experience with disability in some way, shape, or form. So it's really a community issue. It's a holistic issue.
What can you tell us about some of the people that have inspired you to work so hard for a class, some of the people that you have worked with on a professional basis?
Yeah. Oh, boy. I've just been so fortunate, Paul, to have mentors and have folks that have guided me. My mentor, Fred Ank, who actually hired me back in 1973. My dad was really an inspiration and a mentor. He was so inclusive in his life and his friends and people that were around our family. When I got to the University of Pittsburgh, Mo Coleman and Jim Cunningham, other folks that inspired me in this community to continue to do the work. And then, of course, people with disabilities that I've met, Paul O'Hanlon and Judy Barasella. And I met a guy when I worked at Kane Hospital. His name was David. And David really just sort of opened my eyes to similarity rather than getting focused on difference.
How do you find the disabled people that need help? And what are some examples of things that you can do to help them?
Well, certainly one thing we really like to do is make sure the community knows we're out there. That's why it's so wonderful to have this chance to chat with you today, Paul, is that, you know, your show is listened to by a lot of folks. We want people to know what we do and more importantly, why we do what we do. We are, of course, a United Way agency. We're tied into that system. Having been in the system for 44 years, I know just about everyone that's out there doing the good work of community building.
And you mentioned being tied in with the United Way agency. How do you get your funds?
Yeah, we have about a $15 million budget, Paul, that we operate from, of which about 85-87% are government support dollars that are either coming to us from the county or the state. The balance, the other 15%, come from either private contracts, foundations. We have an incredible foundation community here in Pittsburgh that are generous and very, very concerned about building an inclusive community. And lastly, donations and gifts that we get from community. As a nonprofit organization, we really benefit from folks who are generous in this community. The United Way has been phenomenal, and Bob Nelkin, who's the president and CEO of the United Way, will be celebrated for his many years of service soon. Is just a phenomenal community leader. He's grown up here in this Pittsburgh area. He knows this community, so we're just so fortunate. Pittsburgh's a wonderful place.
And will funding change at all with the government struggling as it is? We've heard plenty about that today.
Oh, boy. Do we have another 2 hours that we can talk about that, Paul?
Unfortunately, we do not, but that's about what it would take.
Yeah. There's obviously no question that things have become more conservative with the economic concerns. We see the government shut down. All these things have ripple effects certainly on the nonprofit community and on the human service community. But what bothers me even more or concerns me even more is the notion of individuality versus interdependence. Some folks just feel, you know, if somebody has a disability, that's not my problem. That's not my issue. I shouldn't be involved. And I gotta believe that we have become a successful community and a successful society because we've watched out for each other, not because we've just looked to be selfish or just looked out for ourselves. So I'm hopeful that we can continue to have conversation about what government should do, maybe what government should not do, but we be thoughtful about it.
Al Condolusi is the CEO of Community Living and Support Services, or CLASS. He also teaches at the University of Pittsburgh. Al, thanks so much for being with us on Essential Pittsburgh.
Paul, this has been my huge pleasure. I've been a fan of this program, of your show for many years, and just really appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you so much. Up next, how do struggling South Hills communities plan to attract residents and economic development? When Essential Pittsburgh continues on 90.5 WESA.